Call the meeting to order. And for a motion of minutes.
I make the motion to approve the minutes of the minutes.
Any discussions?
Well done.
All right, all favor.
Aye.
Aye.
Mindy, do you have the first page, the agenda? Do you have an extra copy of that?
I think I did.
You did?
I did a whole set.
In the stack book?
Yeah.
The front page of the second one.
Also, I need it.
All right, we're moving to resolutions. We will start with resolution 23. Reestablishing the Orange County Trails Advisory Committee. Any discussion?
Second.
So this committee was an ad hoc committee to be, was that temporarily?
This committee was established in 2009, I believe, mm-hmm. as an ongoing committee, but it's an advisory committee. Mm-hmm. So it's reappointed every year, or I think maybe now moved every 2 years.
Okay.
But it's served all volunteer, looking at all the trails across the county. During that time, it was recommended to be set up by the Non-Motorized Transportation Committee. And it's been a model. Other counties around New York State and apparently around the country now are doing this to coordinate their trails work.
And that was representatives from all of that county that's done it.
Including, for the past several years, Craig.
Yeah, it's been a conflict. I've always had meetings, but, I was on it one for the first meeting. Last year that it actually fell on this Monday. You know what it's going to be?
It's the third Monday.
The third Monday, okay.
So if we avoid that, we can do it. And I've served on it since we founded it.
Former chair?
Former chair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion? Any other? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We will move to resolution 55. Confirming the reappointment of a member to the committee. And this, I believe, is for...
A second? Second. Mm-hmm.
This is for reappointment of Mary Natter. It's a 3-year term that begins, it's from President Sill.
I am happy with all of these. In the PDF that I had, the forms didn't seem to match up with the name on the resolution. So I don't know if that's been dealt with, but if we can watch for that as we go forward. But I'm happy with Marinetta.
Any discussion?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor?
Aye.
We will move to resolution 66, which is confirming the appointment of the member of the Community Service Board. Discussion?
Second.
And this one is for the reappointment of Ethel Knox. Again, first of your term. Any discussion?
Great kid.
None, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aaron, move on to resolution 67. This is confirming the appointment of a member to the Community Service Board. This is for Ms. Joanne
I'll move this one.
Okay. Second.
Yes, there's something wrong with that.
Are your appointment policies then also set?
Where are we on it? We need it moved, or we had it moved?
No, we have it.
Okay. John Brown, this one is, right?
Mm-hmm. I moved it. We will come second.
No, I got it.
All in favor?
Aye. One of the ones that has a problem with the text. It says Apple Docs.
It is, but it's for a subcommittee.
Got me. Mental health subcommittee.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll
move it.
Okay.
Have you had comments for a member of the board health subcommittee?
That makes sense.
As a liaison, or?
No, member.
I just wouldn't have recognized that you needed to have a separate appointment for the subcommittee. But happy to do it that way.
Yeah, for me to see.
All right, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution's coming up, are we?
Yes.
This is confirming the reappointment of a member to the Community Service Board Mental Health Subcommittee. This one is for Cheryl Marr to serve after your term.
Second.
Did you all expire at the same time? Is this generally how this works? Would you lose the whole board potentially if they didn't want to? Yeah, they all expire at the same time.
Yeah, they're not staggered.
But it's a bigger board than this, isn't it? So the question is, they all of these appointments expire on the same date, but these aren't all the members of the committee.
The
March committee.
The membership is prescribed in state mental hygiene law. Mm-hmm. It's always difficult to keep that board full because if it's a large committee, some of the medical community, that uses of the system, is very, very prescribed.
How many people are on that board, do you know?
I guess it's 15.
15? Okay. And they're all from different, is that in here?
Yes.
What part of it?
Yeah, Cheryl's from West Shokan, Brown is from Kingston.
So it's not whether they're in the mental health or medical profession, but they represent different areas?
No, not all of them, but some of them use certain requirements in the law. For example, users of the mental health system are not represented on this board. People from the medical community.
How many are appointed by legislators?
Mm-hmm.
How many are any of them appointed by legislators?
I don't know how many they are. I think they're all at the equivalent of the county to get confirmation.
Oh, okay.
All right. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right. We will move to Resolution 70. Today, public hearing on proposed local law number 7, a law to reduce addiction to tobacco products by raising the minimum age for their purchase of the 21.
I'll move it.
Okay. Any discussion? Do you want some discussion?
Absolutely.
So, Ken, you talk to the training and the education. Do you have an idea on how much that's going to, what the cost is going to be there and how much?
I think that our attention is to deal with the district resources.
Yeah, and it should basically, I mean, I don't.
There's a lot of information in the public domain that we can use. And again, it's something we hadn't done before. We've always been thinking about the enforcement end of tobacco, and it's just, from the last one, that's what we did, it would be helpful for us to have not only have information, but, people are helped. If you're just writing information, that's why you turn into a conference, a session about, best practices in regard to enforcement, and then,
and then on to the enforcement. We're going to hire an enforcement officer.
We had through a federal grant that we have, an employee in NIDA who goes out with the various health sanitarians, and they can provide tobacco products.
That's where we lose Tracy.
No, this one.
No.
I think this one is okay because it doesn't put them in any harm's way.
But why would they do a minor? Why would they have somebody 18 to 21? Because it's illegal. It's currently illegal to buy cigarettes when they're 18. You want to have somebody who's under 18 try to buy cigarettes? No, I mean after we pass it.
Then you could address her.
But this enforcement in here is for enforcing the 18 to 21 aspect, right? Mm-hmm. Right now the current law is 18, and this law is 18 to 21.
So the existing enforcement that we're using for the under 18 will do some things for whatever with 18 and 21 year olds, but at that point you'll be able to use adults for this. We will be using adults.
We'll mix it up.
But just to be clear,
this isn't like any law enforcement action. This is literally that you give a team that you hire them currently as summer interns.
Yeah.
And they'll be accompanied by a sanitarian. And they'll go over the counter with $20.
I'm aware of that aspect.
I don't think there's anything legislative like Bartels is under such a concern about.
No, actually.
But that's existing now.
Yes.
Yeah, so but what I'm asking is.
So if the law, you all were to change the law,
yeah.
We change our program.
And we'd be able to do that. So we wouldn't be hiring, we have. Okay, and grants cover everything we do with enforcement.
Yes, public people.
I had been willing to bring forward this legislation just myself, but Legislator Bartels actually had introduced it as Legislator Maloney informed us last month, and she very much wanted to stay on it. So we agreed to do it together, and we have worked on it to make sure that both of us are happy with it. It should be easy for the businesses. They have the birth date calendars that they have currently, and those dates would just change. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of disruption with it.
No.
I think it's just going to be benefit.
Don't sell alcohol.
Be smoking.
Don't sell alcohol.
Yeah.
But all these retail shops that sell beer, and I mean, they're already set up. They're already looking for that thing on the 21st. With the penalties, are these the same penalties that we have for 18 and under sales?
I think the answer is yes.
So this is a reiteration of the law that we have. Adding on to.
No, so right now the 18 is state. State law.
So but I mean a lot of this.
Yeah, it's that all the fines are consistent, and now we're going to increase the age specifically for Ulster County. We're able to do that as part of our own public health law.
What about the license to sell tobacco? Is that going to be, are they able to lose that selling under 18 but not under 21?
No, so we have our, in addition to the state tobacco license, we also have a local tax license.
So we'll be able to hold that if they violate the under 21 as well. So it's actually, I didn't see it. I read it real quick for the second time now. I read it on my phone a couple days ago. And so
it does talk just about the fines, except it does reference the 2 foot.
Did you want to see if you want to add that in, or is that a?
What is your guys' thought on that aspect of it? Are you sitting here right now planning on more or less treating it as far as what we're able to control in the county, as far as legal questions go? Do you want it to be basically the same as if you sell to somebody under 18, it's the same as selling to somebody under 21, in between 18 and 21?
This is what this law does. It makes it illegal to sell tobacco products to someone under the age of 21. And it can only just find somebody else of other administrative actions that we can take.
But do you want to treat it the same way, 18 to 21, the same as 18 and under?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So if you want to pull it, be the same thing that would lead somebody, an owner of a business, to lose his or her tobacco license for selling under 18. You want the same exact criteria for under 21. I'm with you.
So the answer is yes.
Okay.
Does that. Just because someone made a mistake and sold to someone under the age of 21 or 18, isn't necessarily why you're going to prohibit them from ever selling tobacco again. It's a
sure.
There are two processes, a hearing officer, and then, for example, we have convenience stores that sell tobacco to 16 and 17 year olds. They get caught in a sting, they pay a fine, we then buy the rules, check them a couple additional times, and then they get municipals that, you know, consistently have a problem. That's where the investigation comes in.
But I think the question is, if there are substantial violations, would they eventually lose their license? Does that need to be mentioned in
court? And is there a guarantee that everybody gets treated the same as far as, I see there's a little bit up to the minimum 300, not to exceed 1,000. How are we deciding who gets treated?
It's a central hearing officer.
Yeah.
It's due process.
Yeah.
So there's a board.
Yeah. So that part of it I'm not concerned about, but I think we should check the existing law and see if the provision to pull the license is in that law. Mm-hmm. If it is, then maybe we should add the corresponding law here. But and I would propose that we try to figure out a way to do that, but before the public hearing. But between now and this has to go to laws and rules. So, yeah, we just check on that.
The only other thing Kathy said I had was gone under the Institute of Medicine, which kind of took me to a couple of other sites.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get like an exact, just so if somebody wants to go in and take a look at it, an exact quote, or like if it's the AMA or the...
you're asking for that.
Yeah.
Which quote are you looking to get the reference for?
It was just where you got your numbers from.
Like, on the back sheet?
Right.
I am so sorry you had asked for that.
The Institute of Medicine, and there was a .org, but then they had changed their website.
I think this was...
Are the American Medical Association things that we could...
Well, this is a compilation of quotes that was put together, I believe, by the... American Tobacco Association. Well, the fact sheet, I don't think is part of the law, so I don't think we have to have that.
Will that be in the final law?
No. I didn't intend to say.
Will we have more whereases and things like that?
I suspect that if you authorize a public hearing, that various of the very medical organizations that cancer groups will come and provide a testimony.
The first section has legislative findings and intent, and it has those.
And that's why it's in the law?
Yes.
See, to me, that's a big part of this, but the fact that we are on all levels of government subsidizing health care at this point is a major reason, another major reason on the board. We're paying for it. At some point, we have to require people to treat themselves a little better if we're to fix the cost to the taxpayer, and I think this goes into that.
Well, I think that'd be a good thing to mention on the floor as a reason to support it.
Mm.
And are you going to be able to support it, Mr.
Yeah.
Chairman?
Yeah, I'm going to have difficulty supporting it. I do. And I just have an ideological difference in our role as lawmakers. Telling adults what they can and cannot do. Especially when, to me, it's not a victimless situation, because they're hurting themselves by doing it. That's what I get. Not to get me wrong, I think it's really long-headed. I just think that as lawmakers, we should not necessarily be, like I said, telling people what they can and cannot do, especially when they're young, especially when they're adults. They're 18, 19, 20 years old. And I hate to use the metaphor that people always use, that 18 years old, you can go off and fight for the country, and you're adult enough to make those decisions, but when you come home, you're not adult enough in order to make a decision whether it's self-care or not. So, it's just slippery slope tough situation for me. And I respect what you said. I know that people are going to mention that it's not really victimless because ultimately it leads to higher health care premiums, like you had mentioned,
and it's airborne.
Right, it's airborne. And that's not, like, I have no problem with legislation when it comes to secondhand smoke. And legislating, some sort of policy that keeps people from smoking in cars with children, all of that is fine. But as far as telling an adult that they can't smoke 18, 19, 20 years old, it doesn't sit well with me. I just don't think that's our role. And again, I want to go back to talking about healthcare premiums and stuff like that. And this is a pretty slow type situation for me is that you can make the same argument with poor eating habits, trans fats, saturated fats, all lead to childhood obesity, to adult obesity, and ultimately to heart disease. Heart disease is the number one killer in this country. You can make the same argument with sodium. Sodium, foods with high sodium lead to hypertension, hypertension leads to heart disease. You can say the same with sugar. Sugar leads to diabetes and all kinds of secondary illnesses as a result.
No, those are carcinogens.
Hold on just a second.
No, but my point is that this just opens, Pandora's box for me. Because now what are we going to tell people that they can't, that there has to be an age requirement in order to buy certain types of food? Because ultimately it's going to lead down the same path. The same unhealthy lifestyle and your food choices lead to all of these type diseases that also smoking does. So are we going to require somebody to show ID, in order to buy a Hot Pocket at Hannaford? To me, it's just a slippery slope, and it's a road that I don't feel comfortable going down. Because I don't think that's our job as lawmakers, is to dictate to adults whether they can smoke or not.
So could I...
Absolutely.
Could I try to make a break point in there? Because I think this is somewhere on the spectrum between requiring all adults to wear a seat belt in their car and the things you're talking about. And the question is, where is it? The reason that I move this more towards requiring adults to wear a seat belt is that we have a tobacco industry that is using our 18, 19, and 20-year-olds to drill their message into the younger than 18 group. And yes, food groups try to do that too, to a certain extent, but they're not nearly as successful. And their products are not addicting in the same way that tobacco products are.
Right, but you had mentioned that to the under 18 group.
Yes.
We're not talking about the under 18 group. We're talking about the group between 18 and adults.
Who are the pushers in this scenario? So you have kids under 18 that are not yet smokers.
Mm-hmm.
Who do they get their cigarettes from? The evidence shows that they get their cigarettes primarily from their nearest age group cohort, and that goes up to about 21, and after that, there seems to be a bit of a break. And so if you don't let them buy their cigarettes through their pushers, these older kids who are not making mature judgments in many instances, then these kids don't get started smoking. So you actually are enhancing the autonomy of the younger group. I don't think that's true in any of the other cases. Maybe with very young children, and maybe pediatricians should get more involved to protect those kids. But with these youngsters, you've got a group around them that is serving to put peer pressure on them to smoke. And that's the group we're trying to make it more difficult for them to do that. And you have this highly addictive substance. So we're going to talk all year long about the addiction epidemic that we have with opium, right, and heroin. This substance is much more addictive than heroin. Nicotine and cocaine are the two most addictive. There is also some evidence that if we can stop people from becoming addicted to one substance, they're less likely to become addicted to another. So this is a very different realm, I believe, than food substances.
Well, you're making the argument that the that our health care premiums are going up, and it's like, no.
I didn't make that argument. But I would say that I have never had to hospitalize a child at 18 or 19 or somebody at 22 as they're trying to come off a soda pop. It's very bad for them, but rarely. You may have people who live their whole lives that way and get themselves into a lot of trouble, but it's rare. This is not rare. This is one of the most common causes of mortality and morbidity in this country.
Sure.
So,
no, I absolutely agree with all of it. My only disagreement is the role that we should play as lawmakers. I don't think that we alone should argue a legislative solution to this. I think education is a big part of it as well. So whether that's at home or it's in schools or it's other programs that don't necessarily require legislation in order to lead these kids, well, not kids, but adults now, down the right path, if they're going to make better decisions and decide not to. I just don't feel as if that's up to us as lawmakers. I feel as if we're living in a never-increasing nanny state where people look to government for all the solutions, and this just happens to be one of them. That I don't think that we have a lot of business telling adults what they can and cannot do with their bodies. So, even if it is a bad decision, I just don't think that's our role.
I would just like to add to what Kathy said. cigarettes, tobacco is already regulated. It's not like sugar, which I agree. And at one time, we were trying to get healthier food even in the vending machine. And the teachers at school don't let the kids bring in sweet snacks and chocolate. I can't tell you how many times the kids have been sent home with them. But since it's already regulated, and we see there's a problem, and my kids started smoking at a young age because they had an 18-year-old friend who was supplying it, and if you cop knocking at the door, the kid had cigarettes, and I'm like, well, where'd they get them from? But, and I, as much as anyone, would prefer not to have, Big Brother step in and oversee. I'd love to drive around without my seatbelt on, but it's the law. And this is already a regulated, addictive substance. So I, for those reasons, I'm not sure of it.
No, and I totally hear where you're coming from, and really it goes back to that fundamental role that I feel that we should play as lawmakers, especially when it comes to, regulating an 18, 19, 20-year-old adult from making their own decision of whether they want to smoke.
The military, which is often the argument that people will bring up, does favor such laws. And I agree that it's important for us to have cut points. I would just argue that the cut point should be based on the addictive character. Because I bet if I were bringing a law to you that said we weren't going to sell heroin products to 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, you'd agree with it. Because
people are on DNA cigarettes and dying in parking lots either, so.
They have much less acute course than that. That's true. They have a much less acute course. But if you want to look for the magnitude of the impact, I could argue very forcefully, I think,
sure,
that the magnitude of the impact here is on...
I try not to argue with doctors on medical issues.
Sorry about that. I try not to use the authority wrongly.
No, it brings the conversation to the table, too, and that's what it's about.
Well, and I have a lot of respect for people's autonomy and do not like to impose on it.
Right.
But I think when law does impose on it, it does it for very narrowly specified purposes, one of which for me is to enhance the autonomy of an individual. So, for example, if somebody is having an acute psychotic episode, we temporarily hospitalize them and provide treatment to get them to the point where they can then make their own decision out of their own personhood. I see this legislation as doing that for 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who are poorly positioned to reject the pressure of their peers and of the industry that is trying to addict them to something during the time that they're more vulnerable. If they were more vulnerable after they were 25, then I'd have a bigger issue. But they're not. They're more vulnerable now during the younger age. And we made very similar types of decision in changing the law for alcohol to 21. And it's gone down to 18. Went back up because of all the automobile accidents that happened because of that.
Right. And because other people were victims of their...
Right.
Yeah, you know, poor decisions. So.
And other people, I think, are victims of the poor decisions here of the 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who are currently buying tobacco products for people who can't buy them for themselves. So I see it less as keeping the cigarettes from the 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, as keeping them out of the role of being able to keep the product sliding down the slide to the younger age groups. I hope you think about it more.
Well, no,
again,
you know,
playing now.
And like I said, I think this is it's well intended. I mean, it really is. And I can understand where you're coming from. That you want to, you know, protect people and keep healthy as possible. And my issue is just with what our role should be. So,
okay.
I appreciate it, folks. So. Yeah. Well, there's a public hearing anyway.
Yeah,
I very rarely vote against a public hearing, and I will not do that here because I'm really interested in hearing what public. Yeah, and that's what it's about. You know, maybe somebody's going to come up to the podium and really sway the way I feel about it. Maybe I don't like but no, I rarely wrote the podium.
You're open to facts and data.
I'm not an ideologue. I have an open mind.
I'll accept the vote on the public hearing as a vote to explore it further.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anything else? No. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm sorry. Legislator Manning and Petit are raising the issue of adding additional people who are supporting the legislation.
Okay.
Yeah.
They
have to ask it. We're the authors.
All right, we're moving on. That was resolution 98.
I move resolution. Oh,
yep, no, okay. You can move it. Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 9. A local law was up a countywide notification requirements for trapping of free roaming spray and or
gas. I'll second it for discussion.
Mm-hmm. This will go to the rules as well. And I'll have to go to enforcement.
We'll say it on the first page of the resolution.
Yeah.
It's going to. They're very right under the title.
I like the intention of this. I have questions about several things. One is that at the county level, I don't think we have a group that is a group that actually does the work of trying to capture the feral cats.
The PCA.
But they're a no-kill center.
Right.
And this legislation seems to be directed towards the fact that many of the cats are picked up and then...
Do they keep the cats once they pick them up? They're supposed to.
Yeah.
That's what part of this law is. There are some groups that call themselves rescue groups, and basically they hire themselves out as exterminators. And the cats are killed before they even, you know, basically...
Yeah, Mount Marion School, I know there was a group of people that got the cats, had them stayed and released them.
And released them back. Yeah, so the intent of this is, when you look at the findings, it's for the TNR programs. So, you know, working with the SPCA, working with other rescue groups, and there's many of them. What the intent of this is to do is you know, we didn't want it to be a burden to them, but I've spoken to them, they'll be out to speak to this, is that they will post notice, they'll keep records. Most of them, their intent is to, if the animal's sociable, they'll find a home for it, but they will have to keep the animal for a certain period of time. Before
they... And they're checking for the chips.
Right, to see if they're chips, and that's a big one. Initially, that had not been in there. It was in there, it was taken out, because we didn't want to cause a financial burden to the rescue groups. But you can get them on cost or for free. And microchipping is going to be one way that they'll be able to enforce this law, because if Dr. Adam Saunders, who's the humane officer, he said if he goes in and he finds deceased animals that do have chips and the owner wasn't contacted, that'll give him the right to pursue further action and press charges. So we have discussed this with him.
And he's with the SPCA, right?
He's with the SPCA. He's previously the executive director.
Uh-huh.
There's been a change in command. He said he actually prefers being in the humane end of it,
uh-huh.
Because he likes hands-on. And, you know, there's one rescue group in particular that we've been trying to chase around. They're very responsive because they don't keep the animals. And they euthanize anything they get their hands on. So the other side of this is when it goes to public hearing, you're going to have the PETA supporters out.
There's a profitability aspect to that and what drives them.
Yeah, if you look at her 990, she's making a fortune. But PETA does not support free-roaming animals. They think they should be inside only. And if they're outside,
you're saying a lot of things that are new to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, should we have the SPCA come and talk to us about their view of what the problem is? Because I do not want any animal captured by somebody and then...
Immediately killed. Yeah.
So that seems like a very clear goal.
What's going on?
But the fact that it's going on is new to me, and you seem to know specific groups that are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if there might be some other mechanism to deal with it than this.
No, we've tried.
And this is the WE is at what level?
Other rescue groups, Newburgh Scats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about multiple counties.
Uh-huh.
I've been in touch with Alley Cat Allies, which is even outside of the state. You have Kim Kelly, who's a local person who works with, because the SPCA doesn't do all the trapping and TNR on their own. They work with other groups or other people.
And TNR is?
TNR is trap, neuter, and
release.
Essentially, animal populations don't exceed. You know, we have one at our transfer station. It's never been more than five. You know, there's a pecking order. They don't allow anybody else into the group. They've all been spayed and neutered. They've had their rabies shots. It becomes less of a burden than, you know, just letting them breed in the male spray, and it stinks, and, you know. So that has been, and across the nation, it's shown to work. Hungary's been doing it. I met a vet who's from Hungary. She says, we have a program, all the animals are everybody's, but that's a different community. So everybody feeds them, everybody takes care of them, and they're all spayed and neutered.
That's the part of this that confuses me, I guess, because I've been in favor of TNR programs, although I didn't know that was the acronym for it, when they come before us at the local level, like in my town.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd be worried about when I first looked at this legislation is, will it impede or stop some of those TNR programs,
mm-hmm.
because we now have this thing that somebody could get sued over it or fined or, you know, that it's illegal for them somehow. And so I'd like to try to make sure we get that sweet spot.
Well, interesting.
Yeah, I know that. I just wanted to say that the FDA shared this on Friday. I did send it down to the county attorney's office for some review. I don't know
that we have legal authority to do this law.
So I'm going to have some research done through that office, but I don't know if you just have a publisher.
Why would that be?
So you're dealing with their overall issues.
Of the towns?
Yeah, your towns, the villages. This is a kind of a gray area where, you know, it's not covered necessarily by having a fixed tax, but we have some authority to legislate beyond the law. That's what you've done with the pet sellers or for tethering or that, but and this is different type of law. So I know it needs to legal review. I just sent it down for them to look at.
Did you
our lawyers
look
at it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
I don't
know
if it's through.
I'm still
kind of new.
Yeah. Sure. And Tim's point, yeah, you would like to know your legal authority, what we can and cannot do as far as home rules. I almost feel, me personally, a little uncomfortable moving forward with what I'm doing here.
Laws and rules will take that aspect of it up, though, right? With them,
right,
the reason it's going there. So if it's laws and rules, that aspect of it, I feel comfortable passing it to laws and rules and having them hold off on it and sit it there. I don't know.
Will you have the answers? And if it was between now and, I don't know, I attend to it, would there need some time in order to do some more legal review prior to laws and rules?
Laws and rules. About 2 weeks. Rules, because they can't even talk about it.
Because
we hold it here,
right?
Right.
So we want to have a public hearing before we really know, you know what I mean? Because otherwise we're going to have we're going to start a whole thing that some things we might not have to deal with.
And if they're not satisfied with the answers are still, I think that they have to deal with there, but some legal aspect that has to be addressed, then they could potentially hold it there. Yeah, but if that's the case, and you said maybe within the next 2 weeks,
we'll
have some answers.
And also, too, just to be clear with the committee, the reason why we're involved, we currently fund a CNR program through Kennedy. We do that, the county health department plays a role in rabies prevention, which is also an important piece of that. So we connect the dots for you, like, you know, why the heck is the county involved in a CNR program?
Because they support a CNR program, then you want it to actually be a program. All right, there's one rescue group, actually, she goes in, people give her substantial amounts of money. And
I think that it might be good to have a little broader initial discussion, because maybe we shouldn't have these free-ranging kill squads. Instead of just having a fine for not notifying somebody, maybe what the county is doing is a sanctions program, and the other people have to be somehow certified, and we could build this into some kind of certification. Because if that person is good at trapping,
they're over-regulating people who volunteer.
Right.
And 12 years doing that makes you
feel so you thought of that.
And if you don't know where your animal ends up, the reporter that wrote this law lost his cat, and he found the group that had adopted it out. It was in New Jersey. So he got reunited, but you also need to know, you know, what is happening to your animal. So TNR group might come in, didn't kill the animal, but found a home for it, and so you're still losing a family member that way. So some sort of notification has to go out. You need to know who to go to find out what happened to your family pet.
I
have a question about Section 8 here on page 5. I don't know if this speaks specifically if the home ruler may answer that question, but does local law have no effect in a city, town, village located within the county of Ulster that has enacted an ordinance, resolution, or law regulating the trapping or free roaming? The stray feral cats within its jurisdiction, would that address?
With regard to the area of law that is in ag and markets law is very clear. The state law gives us some ability to do requirements that go beyond ag and markets law, which we've taken advantage of that in the county. Again, feral cats are not something that's regulated by ag and markets law, getting into the environmental conservation law and, cracking the brain.
And I also just, and maybe I need to just get up to speed on this, but it just seems to me like maybe getting with some of these groups and considering, like we did with the puppy people, that if we somehow could get them in the room and discuss what the problem is, maybe there's a solution that doesn't require a law. Maybe they could all of the ones they trap could be given to the SPCA.
If you get the good ones. But if you get the PETA followers, they're going to use them outside, because cats shouldn't be allowed outside.
The PETA followers? The PETA,
I just started reading it and I went,
more animals than any other group.
They're based, a lot of them are based in cities, which is where the
you have some animal organizations believe it's more humane to euthanize a feral animal, a stray animal, instead of putting them back. And this speaks to this one group out of this, I believe the town of Rochester, it's very controversial. And that's where a lot of this is coming from. I've actually been at the SPCA when they bring feral cats, and I tend to do a lot of behind the scenes and bring them in paperwork. And there's no dismissing these animals, they're coming with it from back.
That's my experience. Like feral cats,
you only 10 steps away from.
They're like gangster cats.
Doing rescues for 12 years. I've also rescued. And that's something else I'd like to look into too, because they're just causing a nuisance. And bringing some of these, rescue groups who are really exterminators into the area. For money. They're being nice and they're feeding these cats, and a lot of them come up on the perch and you can pet them and they're really sweet, but they're letting them breed at will. And the next thing you know, you have one cat who ends up with 25 the next season, and then it turns into a cat.
That's why I said we didn't even have that outdoor cat.
And I come across very sweet cats, so, not all of them are gangsters. Some of them are very much
valuable. So what about the ones that are kind of like really...
That's where the PNR comes in. That's the strain order they get a rabies shot at, and then they just want to get found from.
That's
regular. Yeah. And any slips continue to feed them. And they do. That's how you know. The whole universal is cast in state or third day, but not here. Under anesthesia.
You want to move this forward, you're going to see a strong debate. There are people that do PNR, is there a situation, while others believe that try to euthanize in the morning.
I started looking at it.
And they kill birds, and it's going to be wild hunt.
It's going to be like a room full of feral cats. So you think that we should just wait to get the make sure that we've got the correct form of law if we are able to bring it forward at the county level?
No, I think that should be done at laws and rules to see if there's anything else that they want to put in here.
That's why it goes to multiple committees.
Being that it's only a public hearing, I think if things really have to be changed, it'll be when the actual law was.
But do we want to pull it back? Do we want to tweak it a little bit so we're not dealing as much craziness at the public hearing as we could just have it wide open?
And we'll continue to tweak from here on out. This is something by the time we're voting on it, it's not going to be tomorrow.
I lean in the direction that Mary's alluding to here. When you have a complicated subject, it seems to me like if you start with everybody who's supporting it, unified and understanding it, and get all the kind of, it might be that there's just one or two places, but if we're doing that as amendments instead of doing it here, and I'm not sure they would all be ones that laws and rules would get. The question that Ken brought up, yes, but this to me seems like it's complicated terrain. It's emotionally charged terrain, And so I like to make sure that every piece of it...
Like, look at the pet sellers. I mean, that was a very long, 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 drawn-out thing that I think maybe might not have gotten dragged out so long had it been, you know, a little more...
If it was cleaner when it started.
When it started,
but,
yeah.
I'm not sure what else would you want to put in there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know yet. Because, again, you know, you've had, it sounds like, multiple conversations in a long history.
Oh, years, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah.
But maybe some fresh eyes will see something different.
Yeah. You know what I mean? This is a new... Can I make one quick point? This is for a public hearing, right? Mm-hmm. Orange County, plenty of counties don't even do public hearings. Are we going to do one or two on this one? So the point is that we created this for good reason, this public hearing thing, like other counties have done.
It's not required as a public hearing.
Oh, okay. But Orange County doesn't do the second public hearing on a lot of things. We don't have a lot of our stuff.
We only have the second public hearing in the
law.
I mean, we're just looking back along.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a public hearing.
Why this is different now.
This isn't what
I mean, like, I'm not familiar with this whole...
Well, we'll be discussing it again.
Yeah. 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 And we'll
be back. We don't have to put it up for a vote. This is just the public hearing.
Right. And even a public hearing, like, so you want people to show up knowing what the bulk of this policy is going to be as well. So if people start showing up and talking about and asking questions or making comments about things that are ultimately going to be changed, taken out or added...
which might be inevitable. So the month or two we take before we put it up for public hearing, then we'll hear questions, and at the end of it, we'll just realize that we cost ourselves 2 months by not just putting it up for the public hearing.
Well, it was almost 2 years. Almost 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't delay it. We went to public hearing.
Right away. This is 2 years and 2 months.
This is my point. This is a public hearing.
Another thing that some people have had issues with, I know John Perry has had a lot of issues with just sort of rushing things through, like, especially when there's no immediate reason in order to do it. I like to err on the side of, caution.
I hear that a lot, rushing things through. We've got 2 year terms and it takes forever to get things done.
Right, but you want to do it the right way, too. You don't want to just push
it
through because you know, we have a 2 year term. You know, things take longer than 2 years sometimes.
But you
also want to do it right. You still
want to do it through because
you're under, you know, an artificial timeline.
I can only really hear one person at a time, but I do take the point that there are animals that could die because of their taking off it. But the point that we're making, that I'm making, is that you may go quicker by going a little more slowly at the beginning than by charging in. And the charging in approach was what was taken with the puppy mill legislation. And there was a lot of going back and then going forward that might have been avoided, and it might have gotten passed quicker. We don't know. But those of us who watched that, I felt that it would have done better to have more discussion initially. Tobacco 21 came to this committee in mid-year last year. There was a meeting at which the American Heart Association came, the American Lung Association, American Cancer Association, and there was buy-in from the groups that were going to be helping to inform the public. So for me, you know, I'm as much in your camp as I could possibly be, at least from what I've heard so far, but I'm still a little confused about it. So if I'm feeling that way, you know, if we schedule a meeting where we're talking about it and maybe have some of the people that are trying to help get this taken care of come in, it just seems like then we unify behind it in a way that we can't do without that coming up to speed on it. So that's why I prefer to wait. I'm, you know, reluctant in the face of the enthusiasm.
Yeah,
but this idea that it's just a public hearing, that is not happy-making to me, because it basically says that you prepare to start again from scratch after the public hearing. And it's a big process to go through to do that.
I'd rather have any changes if you start all over again.
We're here to public that day. And this comes down to us and our votes. So when you guys took 2+ years for the puppy mill legislation, that was on you. You were making those votes. You guys could have went and maybe fought harder to get people in a room a little earlier. When something takes 2 years, I just think you can't just blame it on the public.
Well, what's that right now? We need to get people in the room. We need to get the 23 legislators on the same page, and that's bottom line the way that goes.
Yeah.
So if you can't get common thread to go with all of them, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think if we get in the habit of passing legislation based on an artificial time frame, that's when we end up with issues. I would rather take the time and make sure we don't pass flawed legislation and do it the right way.
So who else is working on this? Because I'm happy with the way it is.
Well, B's reviewing it, right?
We have three lawyers in the legislative office that I value even more than her opinion, to be honest. So I look forward to getting our own.
I mean, when you're so through the attorney's office, I think everybody works together collectively.
All right.
I think Vicki and Jay lean to them
But usually we know in our meeting what our legislative lawyers have said about a particular thing.
Yeah.
And we don't have an opinion right now. It doesn't mean they didn't make one, but we don't have it.
Yeah.
Which again is lovable.
And in terms of informing the public and inviting them to a public hearing, I'd like to understand the law well enough to do that well.
We have another month to do that, though.
Yeah, but why would I... I feel pressure
to... It's putting the cart in front of the horse.
I disagree. I think it's done.
Because
you have the persons or persons that are putting it out that have a feel for it, or has a real feel for it.
Right.
And then you get the public's opinion, then you're back to do it. That's how I look at this. But that's how I look at it.
We've been trying to get some chance to make movement, and I think it's great, and I'll think about it. You're talking now a year and a half.
You know what down static and I've had 8 pounds
a year?
Has any action? No, they've looked at it and reviewed. Part of my issue, too, is that this is a law. It's a local law, and we haven't had any attorney review of the actual law.
I didn't realize when we put the resolutions in that the attorneys were reviewing them as well.
Well, it's a bill of law. I would feel most comfortable having our council review to make sure that
they get on the table here.
If you were coming up with it, you would run it past your lawyer, you know, the legislative lawyer, to see what their opinion is on it.
Like I said, I look at it differently. You're going to get a lot of opinions from the public. You have an idea on what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You do the first public hearing. People talk. Then we get down to business. That's how I look at it. But let's vote. I'm a yes.
I'm going to put a motion on the table for this moment.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
No.
All right, so and you're going to make any changes you want, so I can expect to see any amendments or changes or whatever, right?
We're going to find out what the lawyers say.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we'll go by their recommendations.
See what we have to. I mean, maybe there's nothing.
Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you.
Your point was laws and rules were going to address this. You made that point before and I didn't respond, but I don't feel that I should delegate the substance of this, including the legality, to another committee. And I think laws and rules has already this year brought forward documents that I felt had legal flaws. They just didn't catch them. So then it has to be dealt with later. So I think if I have a concern here that
my vote has to represent the fact that I have that concern, and I'd like to have that concern answered before I can fully support something.
I really
they could do their job in addition, but I don't see any reason to send something to them with the idea that they would do some work.
The debate is before the vote, after the vote, I can write the next resolution.
Thank you.
All right, leave a little. Where are we at? This is resolution 99. Authorizing the chairman of the legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Office of Children and Family Services to accept a grant for the Child Family Safety Program.
$208,720.
I'll move
that.
Vote for discussion?
I did. Okay. Second this, but okay. We should wait until Nettie catches up. Moved number 99. And somebody seconded it. I just didn't hear it.
Mr. Chairman, if I just...
Yes, sir.
I know that some of the old legislators may be not familiar with this program, but it's something very special. It's one of the things you have that you wish you didn't have to have, but we, through our Department of Social Services, have a multidisciplinary team returning to the Sheriff's Department, members of our peace management team through Department of Social Services, where we deal with victims of child sexual violence. And the way this office is structured is that it doesn't look like a government office. It doesn't look like a police office.
You were just before there, right?
But this is, where a child who's been a victim can get therapy, can get a medical examination, and get all the related services without having to relive the trauma this is based funding with senior states that support that program. I will mention to the committee, since we're on the record, we haven't talked about it in a while, but the late last year, the legislature authorized the purchase of the office that we operate out of, at 21 O'Neill Street. This is a building that was owned by the American Red Cross. It was customized to our needs back years ago, 2011, when we got it on that location. During our due diligence for the purchase of that property, we discovered the presence of industrial solvents, TCE is the main one, kind of in the mix. It was not at an actionable level where it was unhealthy for the workers there, but we felt that given that we wouldn't want to buy something that had that type of solvent, so we terminated the contract for sale, and we're currently operating there on a month-to-month basis. And we're currently in the middle right now looking for a new location to move this office to. We have a couple that we're looking at. We have a sale on place, so within the next couple of months, you'll likely see another lease before the body to make this move. This is an area of Midtown Kingston where many neighboring properties suffer from this PCE contamination. In fact, I'm aware of there's an auto body shop, one down, that they're still was terminated. So terminated just 4 hours long. So again, while we didn't have as high levels as some of the neighboring properties, we didn't think it was in the best interest of the county to buy something that was contaminated. So we notified the Red Cross we wouldn't be purchasing it, but we are still operating on a month-to-month basis until we find another home.
And is that reflected in this increased appropriation, is to cover those increased costs of rent?
No, this is just
the program services.
The program services, and included in that is money to pay for the rent and or cost of the purchase.
Thank you, Chair. Did we do all of the electronic modifications to that building. That was a resolution that you said it, we were already in there, and that would be the best building to.
Well, we avoided the electrical.
Maybe it was already done.
Yeah. So we first leased this property from the American Red Cross. When we appreciate kind of what we can and can't do as a municipality, we're not able to make capital improvements to a building that we don't own. Right. So at the time, we received the generous support of Gruderhoff and others, where they paid for the customization of that office as a public service to the county. We can't make capital improvements for something we don't own. Again, there's a picture that law enforcement is upstairs and the children are downstairs. We should appreciate how they structure that so that they can receive testimony and stories from the children about what happened without having to have the child meet with a police officer or someone to be in that trauma.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Resolution 100, authorizing the chairman of the legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Health Bureau of Immunizations to provide funds to continue the immunization action plan. And this is from April 1st through March, April 1st this year through March 31st of 2023.
Dr. Nolan, pediatrician, happy to remove an immunization resolution.
Specific high risk, right?
These are parents who are
neglect.
Who lost custody of their children. And again, they're in the steps of recovery, and it's looking to reunify the family through a therapeutic approach.
Right.
If you ever go on a field trip, this is a good one to talk about.
Yeah.
Is it also preventative before the parents, if they're willing to go in, if they haven't been mandated?
This program deals with
your child. It's a good point, though. Does it have anything that serves?
Yes. Different program.
Good. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
All
Resolution 103 is amending spending, having budget to increase funding in the state ultimate health. This is for minimum wage, Iowa work-based workforce cost of living adjustment. Discussion?
I'll move it. Second.
Okay. This is an additional $140,000 appropriated over.
All of our
you can think of
all these things you can
catch the right. Yeah. Okay. Discussion? Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The new world business. I must have something to do.
Thank you so much for this great to hear you all in action. You're great. You're terrific. I applaud you.
Thank you. So this just came to me 2 days ago, and I'm a member of Stock Smart Meters Woodstock, New York, and Stock Smart Meters New York. And the industry has convinced Governor Cuomo to put into his proposed budget this year words I have handed out to you. Ted Article 7 would allow
transportation.
It would change the general municipal law by illegally gutting home rule to force 5G cell towers onto utility poles without review. In 1999, the person who prepared all these documents, Deborah Cobalt, she worked with Senator Larkin to stop industry-sponsored legislation to force a uniform cell tower siting bill that would have gutted home rule. Now Cuomo's budget would allow 5G cell towers on utility poles outside people's houses, on people's houses, and gut local zoning and planning. Towns and cities would not be able to control their siting and would be forbidden from taking a fee where they find it appropriate to site these transmitters. And the equivalent, I'll just read one more, and then I can give you this. The equivalent to what is in the New York budget was vetoed by Governor Brown in California a few months ago after a coordinated campaign of municipal associations, advocates, and doctors said that local planning and zoning review must be retained over a 5G siting. The industry has tried to get the FCC to gut local zoning in docket number 16-421, but municipal associations around the country, doctors and advocates, have fought it. Furthermore, the radiation from these 5G towers would be even higher due to proximity and more dangerous due to frequency than the ones from 19 years ago that Senator Larkin and Deborah Cobalt were able to stop from being forced up without zoning and planning review. So what Deborah suggests, there's something called the Association of Towns and Municipalities, and Ken tells me that Jim Quigley, the town office supervisor, is the current liaison, and I will speak to Jim and ask him to call the town, the Association of Towns. But the association will only listen to an elected official. A citizen can't call and ask the association to take an action regarding legislation or anything. So I'm asking you eight people here, if you could call, I have the phone number for you, the Association of Towns and Municipalities, and ask them to get to tell our senators and assembly people in Albany and the governor to remove this piece of proposed legislation from this year's budget.
So you'd be asking us as individuals to...
Yeah, but as elected officials, you have
you're trying
those
to
of us who are.
Yeah, you have to say you're elected.
To Ken? Do we as legislators have that access to the Association of Towns? I know our town board members and town supervisors do.
Certainly, I think, first of all, thanks for bringing this to my attention. I had not picked up on this nuance in the state election, so thank you for that. But maybe I could suggest that, I know you often will do a letter to our state delegation expressing concern about an issue. This would be something that would fit into that framework, I would think.
I'd like to see the information and think about crafting such a letter.
Right. Someone just sent me the actual text from the proposed legislation. Can I email it to you?
Can you email it to me? I'll give you my email.
Okay.
And then Nettie will distribute
the legislation.
Okay. They're trying to letter for the smart meters.
Yeah.
This is far greater than a smart meter.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking so. 5G is not an essential utility. It's not water. It's not electricity. It's not even TV. It's so that people can download movies faster on their cell phones. And the radiation is far. Well, it unzips DNA and it destroys enzyme activity, among other things. But she has documents in this thing I'm going to give you. She has all the scientific peer-reviewed studies that show.
Yeah, so I'd like to have that information. I actually gave a presentation in New York City at a symposium organized by Deborah Kopal 4 or 5 years ago. All smart meters and all of these electromagnetic devices, I think, need every bit of attention we can give them. Some levels of attention we can't give them because it's precluded by federal law, but for in an area where we can take an action, I think we should be very, very cautious, and so I'd welcome the information.
Right. And the Telecommunications Act says that localities will have responsibilities and decision-making abilities, but this would do away with, and that's why the FCC shut it down in California.
And I value home rule very strongly as well.
And the second thing is I'm part of Citizen Action of New York, and we're just one of many co-sponsors of a march across the walkway over the Hudson on March 24th. And there'll be speakers, and after the march, they're going to literally leave the walkway and go to a local school and join hands and surround the school with good intentions.
Can I add a little bit to that for Barbara?
Yeah.
So this is the March for Our Lives that was organized by the students in Parkland, Florida, and they will be doing a march, and there are marches taking place across the country. So this is the walkway over the Hudson, our local participation in that for those who are going to do that.
Right, and all kinds of you'll see who's sponsoring it, all kinds of new groups, Mothers Against Gun Violence, all these new groups are coming up, participating. And it's great to have people participate. I mean, it's a terrible reason, but it's good to see.
Yeah.
All right, here is this one. And you'll give me your email so I can send you the actual check.
Sure will.
Thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Yeah, great. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
Motion
to adjourn.
Second. All those who want to adjourn, please.
Second.
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 You can't just remember Dave alone.
Wish you said that, but no one heard.
Only on 2 of them did I write the phone number for the Association of Mayors and City Officials.
Just send it to...
Betty as well, and she'll circulate that in the email message that gets to us.
Okay.
That would be better than not getting down in the
Can I swap this one out so that
sure.
so that Betty can have it?
Oh, I need to have it, right?
No, no, we're going to
get the number on it.
So, let me
remove
it.
I have
it
right here.
How
would you like?
Okay. Yeah. Are you going to sign out the
Oh, is this Holder? No, Laura's the focus. But there's two out of the three Fogarty's representatives.
Oh, yeah. That is. Think about that. Yeah.
I was away this weekend, and with the snow on Friday, I had no...